incredible. Beautiful. Thank you. The children's story that Michelle read out, I think pretty much says what I'm going to tell you today. I thought it was really well done. And if you want to know the answer to how many grains of sand there are in the world, I can tell you. Someone actually sat down and made an estimate, and what they found was that the number of grains in all the beaches all across the world is about equal to the number of stars in the universe. So, I won't tell you how many there are. So you've all heard this quip that knowledge is power. What I'm going to tell you today, that the lack of knowing can actually be as powerful and perhaps even more powerful than knowledge itself. So to understand what this is about, we first need to understand what exactly knowledge is. And so people have actually done a pretty nice job in trying to put knowledge into various categories. And here is a nice little chart that tries to do that. So all of human knowledge can be put into these four categories. Now the top two categories are kind of obvious, right? They talk about what we know that we know and what we know that we don't know, right? So what we know that we know is human knowledge, and what we know that we don't know is the part that we know is there, but we just don't know what it is or how it works. The bottom two quadrants are a little bit more interesting, but they're also very important. Actually, let me put this on top so I can see my slides a little bit better. It's hard to see on the other side there. So we have to understand that there is knowledge out there that we don't have any idea about, that we can't even ask questions about because we just don't even know what questions to ask. So therefore, it's important to understand that we also have an area that says what we don't know, we know, and what we don't know, we don't know. So what we don't know, we know is actually often talked about by psychologists, because what is that? It's the subconscious. We actually know it, but we just don't know that we know it, right? So I'm not going to talk much about that. That's for the psychologists. But the one on the right, which says what we don't know, is kind of interesting to us as well. So let me show you how knowledge transfers from one quadrant to the other quadrant. So what happens is that as we progress in our knowledge, we go from those things that we consider to be mysteries into those things that we now become knowledge. So that's the green arrow that goes to the left. But at the same time, there is also the red arrow that takes us from what we don't know we don't know to what we don't know, because guess what? Only after you learn and know about something in the universe are you able to ask more questions about it and then find out that you don't know the answer to those questions, right? So, for example, before we knew about dark matter and dark energy, there was no way that we could ask the question, what is dark matter and dark energy? Well, now we do, and the fact is that we don't know what they are. So those are mysteries to us, right? 100 years ago, nobody knew about black holes. As a matter of fact, just about 100 years ago, Einstein wrote a paper that said that black holes cannot exist. It's physically possible for a black hole to exist, even though his theory predicted it. Well, now we know that they exist, and so we can ask questions about what's in the center of a black hole, and the fact is that we don't know. It's a mystery to us right now, right? So these are all things. Similarly with the Big Bang Theory, we can now ask questions, what happened before the Big Bang? Would we have asked that 100 years ago? No. So what happens is that the stuff in the quadrant that says what we know that we don't know also keeps increasing as our knowledge keeps increasing. So this is a very nice metaphor that somebody has come up with to think about our knowledge as an island in an ocean. We can call it the island of knowledge in the ocean of the unknown. And so what happens is that as this island grows in size, its shoreline also increases in length. And so it's a nice way to show that as our human knowledge increases, the shoreline, which represents those things that are in touch with the unknown, the mystery, also increase over time. So how much of knowledge is in all of these different quadrants? Well, we can't really say because it's very difficult to measure these things. However, here is one possible way of looking at it. We believe that what we don't know that we don't know is perhaps the biggest area right now, right? Because it's almost like an infinite source. Knowledge keeps coming up when we find out more things. And we do believe also that our human knowledge is actually always less than the number of questions that we have. And, you know, we can kind of see that today. If you list all the things that we don't know that we know, it actually exceeds what we actually know. So this is how we look at knowledge. But there is an increasing consensus that there is a fifth area of knowledge that people had not thought about before, and that is the unknowable. So it turns out that we are now beginning to understand that there are some things that we may never know. In fact, if you go back to the story, Eva asked the question, what is gravity? And her mom said, we don't know. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, of course we know what gravity is. Newton told us what gravity is. Einstein told us what gravity is. But the fact of the matter is that those are just formulas that tell you how gravity works. In the end, it is still true. We don't know what gravity really is. And maybe we will never know because it is the laws of nature that we are trying to figure out, but what we don't know is why the laws are the way that they are. And this may well be a question that we might never know. A simpler example of something that is unknowable comes from the fact that the speed of light is a finite number. It turns out we now know that there are galaxies far, far away that are moving so rapidly away from us that it is absolutely impossible for light to reach our Earth ever. So no matter how powerful the telescopes you have, you will never be able to see those galaxies and you will never know what's in them. So it's very interesting that, you know, we are starting to figure out that there are things out there that are really not possible to know. Now, the last thing I want to tell about this knowledge matrix is that it also tells us how we are getting further and further removed from the mysteries in the world, in the universe. On this slide, what I'm showing you is that there is a little region, the red region in the middle, which represents not the total knowledge of humanity, but the knowledge that most of us, we public people, kind of know about, right? As this island of knowledge grows, the shores of that island get further and further away from us, right? Because most of the time, our knowledge as lay people doesn't really change or increase very much. Only the scientists who live at the shoreline actually know what those mysteries are. So one of the things that has been happening is that we are getting more and more removed from what those mysteries are, and we don't even know very much about them. Okay, so what does that really mean? What I believe is that the rapid progress in our knowledge has not only distanced us from its frontiers, but it has also created a feeling of unwarranted arrogance in us. It is true that in the last 100 years, we have greatly deepened our understanding of the physical laws that run our universe, the biology that governs our bodies, and the psychology that controls our moods. But the false hubris that this knowledge has created in us only serves to insulate us from the mystery that hides behind it. Even if we personally cannot answer a question, we believe that some expert out there surely can. In fact, with Google, we don't even need to find that expert now. And with Siri and Cortana and Alexa at our beck and call, we can now choose the personal digital assistant with the sexiest voice to answer our question. You might think that our love affair with technology would make us more curious about science, but it's actually the other way around. To the pure scientists, what science knows is less interesting than what it does not know, because after all, his or her work must focus on the unknown. But to the technologist, the point is to improve on what is already known. The place that discovery and invention once occupied in the public's imagination has now been replaced by our infatuation with technological complexity. A reverence that we have for faster, smaller, and more complicated devices that do essentially the same thing, maybe a little bit better. So by putting the spotlight on what we know, technology has actually made us less curious about what we don't know. So as we happily slide into the area of knowledge ubiquity, we are also quietly losing a faculty whose appearance is thought to be the most likely reason that our ancient ancestors branched off to a different evolutionary path than the rest of the animal kingdom. And what I'm talking about is the faculty to wonder. This uniquely human trait is what distinguishes us from other intelligent species on Earth. Animals may demonstrate curiosity, but we don't think that they can wonder in the way that we do. Now, to be curious is to take some action to find an answer to a question presented by your immediate environment. For example, seeing a bush in front of it, an animal might try to sneak closer to see if there could be a danger lurking behind it. But to wonder is different. To wonder is to raise a question abstractly in your mind whose answer you may not even know how to go about getting. It's a question that would stay with you for a long time and on which you might ponder from time to time. And wonder is an innate human quality that provides young children with a natural motivation to learn by asking questions about everything. Just like that little girl, Eva, who was asking her mom. Wonder also leads to play and exploration, which allows a child to learn even without the help from adults. And here I'm going to sneak something in. This is my grandson wondering what would happen if he pulled the cat's tail. That's how they learn. But wondering is not just for children. The ability to ponder questions in our minds is important for grown-ups too. It is because our ancestors wondered about some very profound questions that we have religion and science today. Questions like, how does the universe work? What is everything made from? Is the universe eternal, or did it have a beginning? And if it was created, then where did it come from? How do we humans fit into the universe, and what happens when we die? And so on. Surprisingly, none of the questions that I just told you have been fully answered so far. But how many of us wonder about them anymore? Many of us have lost our propensity to wonder. And I think we lost it sometime during our schooling. Our educational system chips away at this faculty by force feeding us with rigid, standardized curricula taught from boring, fact-filled textbooks. And whatever little wonder is left in us is then eroded by this widespread illusion that we have, which is often perpetrated by the media, that we humans know everything that there is to know about everything. So our proclivity to wonder is what brings mystery into our lives. When there is no obvious answer to a question, then wonder transforms into mystery. The experience of mystery is as essential to a meaningful life on earth as the more commonly recognized experiences of love, connectedness, kinship, peace, and joy. Without mystery, our lives would become programmed and robotic. In the centering thought in your program, and also what it says on that slide, I tactfully left out the latter part of Einstein's full quote. So here it is. The fairest thing that we can experience is the mysterious. It is the fundamental emotion that stands at the cradle of future art and true science. It is the source of all true art and science. And then he says, he who knows it not and can no longer wonder, can no longer feel amazement, is as good as dead, a snuffed out candle. So that's kind of pretty blunt. Maybe it's Einstein's German heritage that puts it that way. But it's kind of like a damning statement. So that's how important Einstein felt about mystery. And he was a physicist, so he knew a lot. So what role does mystery really play in our lives? First, we should be clear about the distinction between knowledge and mystery. There is a difference between finding the known answers to your questions and pondering on the questions to which no one has an answer. While both science and religion deal with mystery, we often find ourselves engaging with the answers that they offer instead of the questions that they raise. Science offers answers to questions about the universe, and religion has answers to questions about life, and both of them can easily create a mindset in which we think that having the answers is all that matters. It takes a special effort to look beyond the answers to places where the mysteries lie. In religion, that place is often referred to as mysticism. And it is from there that the varied practices of Zen meditation, yogic breathing, Sufi dancing, Gregorian chanting, and even kirtan reciting originate from. By connecting us with the mystery of our existence, these modalities can elevate our minds to higher levels of consciousness and put us in touch with the joy and the abandon that springs from the true essence of who we humans are. Mysticism can also emerge from scientific questioning, but that approach is still in its infancy. A few visionary scientists are starting to talk and write about it, but there is still much work to be done in this area. This is especially exciting because science does not bring with it some of the baggage that religion has had to carry because of its checkered history. There is a growing openness in the world, especially with younger folks, to approach mysticism through the discipline of science instead of the more parochial approaches provided by religion. So to dig deeper into mystery, we actually need to relate it to another idea, and this is the idea of miracle. A miracle is something that appears to our common sense to be very unlikely, and yet it exists. A miracle always raises questions to which no simple answers are forthcoming, and so a miracle then is a special kind of a mystery. The emergence of a beautiful butterfly from the random mixing of a few molecules in the Earth's oceans 4 billion years ago, isn't that a miracle? our ability, the insignificant creatures like us that are bound to the surface of a tiny planet, and yet we are able to comprehend this endlessly vast universe. Isn't that a miracle? Miracles evoke in us feelings of awe, which is yet another human emotion that sets us apart from other species. We are awed by the existence of something that is more powerful, bigger, or more intelligent than us. So wonder begets mystery. Mystery underpins a miracle, and miracles arouse awe. A life filled with wonder and awe takes on a whole new quality. And I'm going to share with you another quote here. This is, I've treasured this quote all my life, I think. It says, first of all, life is not a problem to be solved. It's a mystery to be lived. Osho was a great spiritual leader from India, and he spent a lot of time teaching in this country as well. He died about maybe 20 years ago, I think. So living life as a mystery is living life in the constant presence of awe and wonder. Mysteries are defined by the lack of answers, and yet it is their presence in our minds that often helps us find personal meaning in our lives. Mysteries can speak to our inner selves in profound and personal ways. How we interpret those feelings and what we do with them can be very different for each of us. Some of us may feel comfort in making this awareness an object of veneration in our lives. Others may feel joy through reciting songs and poetry about its beauty. Still others might feel a sense of peace by meditating on its presence within us. Some might even idolize these deep feelings by giving them a form and a name, and even speaking to them. And yet others might honor their reverence through a set of elaborate rituals. Our different approaches merely reflect the natural diversity of human personality. Follow your own urge rather than someone else's prescription. You will find that awe and wonder will create in you an attitude of humility that will keep your mind open to all kinds of possibilities and eventualities. If you want to cultivate awe and wonder in your life, sharpen your perception towards things and take the time to observe them. When you look at everything with a curious and wondering eye, you will see that every object, be it a plant or an insect or even a stone, is a little miracle unto itself. And finally, inspire yourself by reading or watching the work of those that have so beautifully expressed their awe and wonder through all kinds of different media. I'm going to stop here. Thank you very much. Thank you.